and welcome to the World Cinema Film Club. I'm your host, as always, Edward Jones, and joining me, of course, is my co-host, the Professor, Mr. Stephen Palmer.
Howdy!
Tonight, we look at Persepolis, a 2007 adult animated biographical film based on Marijan Satrapi's autobiographical graphic novel of the same name, who also returns not only to write but also co-direct the film alongside Vincent Perrinaud. The film following her journey as she comes of age against the backdrop of the Iranian Revolution, with the title coming from the historical city of Persepolis. Stephen, this was your pick, a film I'd never seen before, and I'm really interested to talk about this evening.
Excellent, I'm glad. So, were you aware of it or the graphic novel or graphic novels that it was
I was aware of the film, but I never got around to seeing it. I kind of had in my head that it was going to be like another heavy watch, like Wolves of Bashar.
Okay, yeah.
And I was aware of the graphic novel because the graphic novel sort of, I think it had a reprint or something about the same time the film came out. So I remember the graphic novel having the same cover as the movie poster. So I think I must have caught the reprint. But both the book and the film I'd never seen until this week. So it was a bit of a fun revelation to actually come to it finally. But this is the whole reason we have the podcast, same as Agents in the Film Club, to cross stuff off and revisit stuff that we may not watch otherwise.
Yeah, so for me, I had read the graphic novel back when it came out, 2001, or at least the first graphic novel. The film is based on two. There's a second graphic novel, Persepolis 2, which I haven't read. So some of this film is about the return, which isn't in the original novel. But yeah, I'm kind of into this autobiographical indie comic stuff. So there's a guy called Joe Sacco, who does these travelogues, and then people that you will know, like you'll know about Daniel Clowes, Seth, people like that. So this Persepolis is came in this kind of world of comic books that I was into, these sort of autobiographical stories, but obviously being very interesting because most of those are usually Americans talking about themselves or slightly weird people. And the fact that this was the story of a woman who's got like a really interesting story to tell about living in a country very few of us have been to under regimes, plural, that many of us haven't got. So I was really loved the graphic novel, and I have seen the movie before, but I like the way that it clearly Marjan has been part of the production of it, you know, co-directing it and everything, that it doesn't go off in so many weird directions. So it kind of edits it straightens things out a bit, and it maybe drops some storylines or some anecdotes, gets them out of the way. But I think it just gets the absolute core of the graphic novel and visually looks just like it as well. Because I think sometimes that can be a problem when graphic novels are adapted.
Yeah, I mean, art style is certainly a diverse thing and something that I think in only recent years I managed to overcome my own sort of art snobbery. There's been a lot of titles that I sort of dismissed just on the grounds of the art style alone. And I mean, certainly when you look at this one, it perfectly captures the art style of the book. And I think that's what makes it so interesting, the fact that the current day is all animated in colour, the flashbacks, which run from 1979, all in stark black and white. But it's such an engaging art style that the film brings with it. And I think it's just, it really sort of adds to the story and helps with the engagement, especially a film which is so heavy on historical detail and the amount of things that this character would go through over the course of her life up until the present day. So, yeah, I, I think this film is especially interesting as well because we, when it comes to like Iran and Iraq, and we certainly have these sort of like predisposed ideas of what the country is like, especially one that is under sort of like Islamic regimes. So this film really sort of challenges a lot of those ideals, especially when you have a character like Marshy, who's just such a real firecracker of a cat personality.
So often when we meet Iranian women in movies, and I watched another movie, funnily enough, so this is technically a French film, but obviously Mojane is, it's about her time as an Iranian, young Iranian girl, mostly in Iran. So I sort of think of it as a dual thing. But I watched a film the other day, and I can't remember what it's called. It was on Mubi, and it's like a Iranian serial killer film with this woman that kills men.
But a girl will walk some alone at night.
No, it's like that. It's definitely inspired by that, but it's not.
I love
like
that movie.
Yeah, but that's an Israeli. Well, that's an American film, isn't it? That's set in a pseudo Middle Eastern country. But I will try and remember what it's called shortly. But that's a woman with some agency. But usually, you know, Iranian movies or movies in the Middle East, the women tend to be quite passive. And obviously you have to be observant of sort of various Muslim culture things. But Mojan is not. She is, like you say, a little firecracker. She constantly is rebelling against authority, which seems to be in her family's genes, full stop, doesn't it? But it's more than that, because it's not just her. It's to show you that her family were quite out there, weren't they? And I just think that's a side of Iran that we don't often see. And I found it quite refreshing. And although it's only one person's story, I relearned a lot of stuff historically about the history or the modern history of Iran that maybe we forget about these days.
Yeah, definitely. So when we look at our family are middle class, and at the same time, they're participating in the rallies for the Iranian revolution, which is because at the time in 1979, the country is ruled by the Shah. And we get that wonderful history lesson where basically the Brits show up and it's sort of like, you know, why don't you just be an emperor and then you can be immortal and we'll look after the oil. It's...
Yeah, I mean, this is the end of British colonialism, sort of in the 50s, isn't it? Where what British people did in the Middle East was pretty fucking shocking, and sort of propping up the Shah's regime in order to not just for oil, it's sort of for power in the region, and it's all, you know, things that we're doing in Suez as well. Doesn't show us in a great light, but yes, again. Mojan at the time, you know, it's just wonderful watching this young girl, because to start with, isn't she? She's been totally indoctrinated about how good the Shah is, but all her family know that he's basically a dictator. And then when there's the Islamic Revolution, there's the initial revolution,
yes.
She totally buys into that and acts like a, you know, there's a boy in the street, isn't there, that they're going to go and punch with nails and stuff because his dad was part of the Shah's guard. And obviously his dad had done some terrible things. And then she completely buys into the Islamic Revolution, but then utterly revolts against it. It just felt very real and very three-dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, when obviously with the revolution, I mean, the fact that her father, like, comes rushing in and he's all, like, excited. He's, like, got this optimism about change. It's funny, really, because we were talking about the change here in Britain when New Labour got in, when Tony Blair got elected, and we thought these winds of change were going to come in, and obviously it didn't work out. And the same with the Iranian revolution doesn't come in because the Islamic fundamentalists win. And they basically impose strict Islamic law, which forces women to, like, dress modestly and wear headscarves. And this really plays into against what Marcia is being raised as, because she's raised in a household with strong women. Her mother's a strong woman. Her grandmother's a revolution on her own. She's completely against the fact that, you know, women shouldn't have to wear headscarves. She sees it as this claustrophobic insult to women, that the fact that they should have to cover up. And when we see inside the family home that, you know, none of the women have to wear headscarves. They are within the family home, they have their own sort of like zone of freedom. And as the film goes on, these sort of like restrictions become more and more strict. And you see her mother and father, they're talking about, you know, maybe we should leave the country. And he's so like, well, why should we leave? So I can like be free, but I would end up having to like drive a cab and you have to be a maid and we'll lose all our sense of status by leaving the country. So they're constantly trying to push back against these changes that are coming in. And Margie is so full of these ideals that are passed on from her parents, and in particular her uncle, Anoush, who's voiced by Iggy Pop of all people.
I mean, this is quick. I mean, this has got voices of Iggy Pop and Sean Penn and Catherine Deneuve, Gina Rowlands. It's got quite the voice cast, hasn't it?
Yeah, and Uncle Anoush is really key to this story, in that he sort of like sparks that revolutionary spirit within her, which she really carries with herself, especially because he gets sent back to prison and ends up being killed in prison and being like buried in like a mass grave. And it sort of fuels this sort of fire in herself, and the fact that she has all these like mini revolutions against these strict laws that are coming in, the fact that anything from like the West is seen as like a decadence and like evil. So she like buys bootleg heavy metal. She wears like Western clothing, and she constantly battles her teachers over their teachings about, you know, how the government are handling things. So she's not afraid of like standing up for her beliefs, and her parents are sort of like, and they're wanting to like back her like strong willness, but at the same time saying, no, you can't constantly be like stepping out of the line and end up sending her to France just to stop her being like sent off to prison or something, because they know that she's going to overstep the line at some point.
Yeah, I guess there's one thing, isn't there, being nine and outspoken, but it would be quite different when she comes of age, which she, you know, they send her away to a French school. Is it to France or is it to a French speaking school in Austria? I can't remember.
She gets sent to Vienna.
That's so right. A very middle class thing to do. Because yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, these are, her parents are very middle class. And it's sort of a structure of society we don't see very often in sort of Middle Eastern films. And, you know, and they do things like have parties with bootleg alcohol. And as you mentioned, her grandmother is just this fantastic matriarch of the family, really blunt as well, isn't she? And I mean, there's a bit later on when Marjan comes back and sort of says she needs to get divorced from her husband, and the grandmother just goes, yeah, so I thought you had a real problem, just get fucking divorced. I got divorced. I'm all right.
Yeah. It's like the stricter the regime comes, the more alive the grandmother becomes.
Yeah,
it's and so wonderful. Like by the time we like get into like the final quarter of the film, and like, you know, women have no rights whatsoever, the fact that they're now questioning like this type of pants that they wear, the headscarves have to be longer, and the grandmother is sort of like, is just coming into her own. And as you said, that Margie, she gets married because this belief that she would have more freedom because she can live with her boyfriend, and then she ends up like discovering she doesn't particularly like him. And her cousin's sort of like, well, you know, my sister got divorced, and then suddenly all the men were like propositioning her because she's no longer this virgin. And
yeah, it's like a divorced woman. It's just all men just think it's a free pass to ask you for sex.
Yes.
And
you
just, yeah.
And the film does such a great job of explaining all these different ideas, like how the changes in the regime come, how different parties are responsible for different changes within the country. And even if you're, as I said, not up to speed on the whole Iran-Iraq war, it really does a great job of breaking it down while bringing such a distinct visual style, like when we have like the troops in the gas masks and they're all pretty much in silhouette, and all you can really see is like the outlines and the eye holes in the mass, and how the young boys are like sold on these ideals of martyrdom, and how they're like given keys to like inspire them to go and serve on the front line and be promised this great reward for dying in combat for the cause and stuff. So it's while it's obviously Marge's story, there's all these other aspects of like the history of the country that are also worked into it, which are just absolutely fascinating.
But also never preachy. I
No,
think
no, no.
I think you know this is very much her story through her voice with her opinions. So you know we always have to say anything that she says is only you know one version of the truth. But I never felt that she's the criticisms that she made are through anecdotes that she's experienced. So there's yeah, isn't there? There's a family friend where the guy is needs hospital treatment that you can only have in Britain, like a heart problem, isn't it?
Yes.
And the way the story's told is it just feels very real, and it's about bureaucracy, and it's about after the Islamic Revolution, basically, the hospital administrator was their old window cleaner. You know, this guy that's just got the job because he's a middle-aged man. He has no administrative skills, no medical skills. He used to be a window cleaner and now he's in charge and he's incapable of dealing with it. It's clearly also a culture where bribery gets you places, if you remember when they come home from the party. And they send Marjan and her grandmother up to go and flush all the illegal wine down the toilet, but actually the whole thing gets resolved because they give the guards, who are like 16-year-old boys, the policemen, the father hands them some money. So, but it's all through anecdotes and it's all through her lived experience, and she's so fun and she's so unusual. You know, she's so headstrong that you just go along with it. But I learned, you know, I learned stuff. It's not a particularly sort of a part of the world, or indeed sort of a part of history that I'm totally au fait with. But I learnt whilst being entertained, and I've never felt I was being preached at. It's not like a documentary. You know, sometimes when you watch documentaries, it can get a bit preachy, or conversely, sometimes when you watch something, you're having to work out a load of things. This sort of just told us stuff whilst being entertaining, which I think is the best kind of memoir.
Yeah, and even when it moves away from the focusing on like the conflict element of the story, which obviously plays a large part, and we see how like war affects the country as well as the changes within the government. And then we have her wilderness years when she's in Vienna and she's being involved in the alternate scene and hanging out with punks, and who basically turn out in her view to be a bunch of fakers because they have no experience of life. They're just a bunch of blowhards in her opinion. And she engages in doomed romances and goes through changes, which is this wonderful scene where she's like describing the changes she goes through, and it's almost like she's hulking out.
Yeah, basically she goes through sort of a kind of a late puberty, doesn't she? And yeah, and it affects her not just physically but mentally. She also, I think initially when she went to Vienna, she sort of hid her Iranianness and kind of told everyone she was French, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
But then actually, as she spends more time with these, I don't know, these pseudo intellectuals, these blowhards, I think that's a good name that you gave for them. It deepens her sense of Iranianness, and she actually becomes far more interested in her own culture.
Yeah, and I love the there's a particular scene where she's like talking about she gets involved with a university student, and you see like the the fantastical vision of like their romance, where he's like this amazing playwright and they have deep conversations, and then they break up, and then she's like has this completely different vision of him, where he's a cheapskate, he writes terrible poetry, and he's like turns into this real sort of like child of a human, because he's shown as like a fresh-faced like student guy when she's in love, and then as soon as she falls out of it in love with him, he becomes like this disgusting human to look at. He's like got crooked teeth and acne and has disgusting habits and stuff. So, but yeah, I think, as I say, it just takes about to Margie is just such a fun character to follow. The fact that she loves Western things, like she likes her sneakers and she has a leather jacket which says punk is not dead, but dead is spelled D-E-D. She can't spell.
Is it Iron Maiden? Is that the band she likes? There's this wonderful bit where she's only like 10 or something, and she gets her mum to give her some money because she hears in Tehran there's a street where they sell bootlegs of Western heavy metal stuff, and he goes,
oh yeah, see the guys in the way, the guys is like,
and the guy's going, Michael Jackson, Madonna, and she's saying, and then someone goes, Iron Maiden. Yes, that's it, that's what I want. I mean, 5 minutes later she gets accosted by two older women who are
from the older women, they kind of look like nuns, don't they, the way that they're drawn?
Yeah. I'm trying to think what to call them, but yes, they say, what are you doing, what are you wearing, what are those shoes? She's wearing like a denim jacket, isn't she, over the top of her Islamic outfit.
You know, and she's got a Michael Jackson patch on, and she's got these symbols of Western decadence on it.
That's right. And the way that, you know, she has a Michael Jackson, and she says, that is a Michael Jackson. Oh, that's not Michael Jackson. That's somebody else. It's not who you think it is. but the fact that she is, you know, I don't know many Westerners who would be into Michael Jackson and Iron Maiden, you know, but she's grabbing on to these kind of, it's not just Western stuff, but it's this sort of this concept of rebelling against the norm. Yeah, it's she's a glorious character, and hopefully we get the sense that she's not alone. We see this in her family and her family friends and things like that. And of course, you absolutely said the member of the family that's voiced by Iggy Pop. I mean, allegedly he's been, you know, back in the past he's been was he involved in the sort of the Azerbaijan's infancy of being a state, and then it turned out he was a communist, and it's really sad what happens to him. it's like,
well, yeah, well, his the uncle gets a whole story. I love the fact he's told as a bedtime story. It's like a bedtime story. It's like, well, this is how I became involved in the rebellion. I like followed under the teachings of this man, and he ended up being shot, and it's
It's quite a story. But she's under Uncle Anoush's spell. He's the most sort of inspiring person. Although, doing some digging, I'm not entirely sure that his stories are necessarily true. However, you know, he was part of this Azerbaijani freedom movement. Then he came back, but then he was a communist, imprisoned under the Shah, gets released after the revolution, but then gets arrested again and eventually executed by the next regime. And it's heartbreaking, isn't it? Because on the night before he gets executed, he's allowed one visitor and he asks for it to be Mijan. And I thought, God, that's a lot to put on a young girl, isn't it? It's awful. The poor girl's, you know, been through more things than we have, for sure, at even the age of 10 or something.
I'm always surprised with Iggy Pop as an actor. I think, because you obviously have Iggy Pop with like the Stooges, and now he's completely like cleaned up. I think he cleaned up around the time of doing the Repo Man soundtrack. It was sort of like that was the thing, like the bolt out of the blue, he called it, of like his sign to he needed to get his life in order, and now he does painting, and I think he's even like, I think he's a grandfather or something, like,
well, he's a grandfather. Does he still have a show on BBC Radio 6? I think he's got quite a popular sort of, you know, he's a radio presenter. He's still got that amazing voice. There's something else I came across him the other day. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, he's, I suppose we could look it up, but
well, yeah, he's the voice of Angry Bob in Hardware,
right?
He's in Coffin Cigarettes, where he has a shot opposite Tom Waits, which is just the greatest thing in the world.
I mean, that,
for a Waits fan like myself,
I was going to say that's a conversation of gravelly voices, isn't it?
it's a very sort of improv sequence. It's about two guys having coffee and cigarettes in a diner, and they're playing themselves. And Tom Waits is being very Tom Waits.
Okay, all right, whichever way you're comfortable, I go either way, Jim or Iggy.
Iggy, you call me Iggy.
Look, I'm sorry I'm late, Jim. Boy, oof, 4-car pileup. Oof, I delivered a baby this morning about 9 o'clock. I was saving lives. I was out there on the highway. It was, you know, there's nothing worse than roadside surgery. You know, you don't have your own tools, and it's just, it's murder. I performed a tracheotomy with a ballpoint pen, and I've been busy.
Wait a minute. You're a doctor?
Yeah, I'm a doctor. I mean, music and medicine, really. It's really been my thing, is combining the two and living in that place where they overlap. A lot of people say it shows up in the music. You know, I don't know.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Wow.
You see, you're just like staring at Tom Waits like, is this true? And he's trying to find the line in this whole sort of sequence. That's really good. I mean, he's also in like Tango and Crybaby, Dead Man, all those like Jamouche projects.
Along with cigarette, Coffee and Cigarettes is very much that, isn't it? And Tom Waits is as well. But I've always liked Iggy Pop. I guess because I'm a big David Bowie fan, and obviously there's a huge connection between the pair of them. Obviously Bowie produced The Idiot, I want to say, and obviously China Girl was a song that Bowie wrote for Iggy Pop and then had to get it back off him to make some money when he'd spent all his money on drugs. But he's just a fascinating character, and I liked the way his voice was on this. You know, it's very, like I say, he's a radio guy now, and his voice is very soothing for some reason. I don't know why. It shouldn't be. It should be terrifying, shouldn't it?
He was going to be played by Elijah Wood in a movie that Nick Gomez was making called The Passenger.
Right.
Which I think would have been...
Elijah Wood was going to be Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Iggy Pop was actually very happy with this. He calls Elijah Wood a very poised and talented actor. But I think the project has been long since shelved. But I was very surprised. Most like Sean Penn's really good in this. He plays the father.
Mm.
And I think everyone's very on point in this film. No one's like trying to do anything particularly fancy, because I think they just know this isn't... I guess they could just got a good direction or something, or they were just like really taken with the story. But Margie is just... This is 100% just Margie's story, and these people are just guides within her world, the people who like she draws like inspiration from. And yeah, the film can like goes through like such shifts. Like you have moments of like real sort of serious tenseness, and then you have just like these really sort of funny moments, such as like how her and her friends are like daring each other to like drive through the city without their headscarves, or when she's goes to that scholar's house to rent a room, and then she's like, oh yeah, I like dogs, as the dogs are like trying to hump her leg and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it works by sticking with it being a sort of an animated version of the graphic novel. I think it works. I'm not sure if this was live action, that some of the humour would be lost. I don't know. I don't know if it would work. Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. But
I think the animation allows you to be more surreal.
Yeah, because quite often sometimes the characterization is in the visual appearance of, you know, quite a lot of this is played quite straight. You know, it is, you know, at times it looks a bit like Charlie Brown or something like that. But then sometimes, like when we talked about those two sort of severely religious women that look like nuns to us, you know, that they are the physicality is very fluid and overbearing, and I'm not sure that you could necessarily do that very easily. You know, this is, you know, this isn't a Christopher Nolan film with a huge budget in it. So I just think they've kept that. There's things that you can do in those autobiographical type of comics with exaggerations and caricature work so well in this. And of course, you know, Margie herself, she's got this mole that on the side, and it's much more actually highlighted in the original graphic novel, but it's just a one point of interest that point makes a difference to everybody else and they stick with it, whereas hey, it doesn't get introduced to quite late. It doesn't get to the middle of the Vienna segment, isn't it, when she grows up. But yeah, but again, they've changed it a bit. There's a whole framing sequence, isn't there, where she's basically getting on a plane. She's in America, I think, and she's getting on a plane to go back to Tehran. And then this film is basically the idea is that she's thinking about her history while she's waiting at the airport to go and get a ticket on the plane. And actually, at the end, she decides not to come back again. But I don't think that's in the graphic novel. I think that's a different framing. I could be wrong. I'm sorry if I'm wrong. It's been a long time since I've read it.
I think the final line in the film about freedom being. The sacrifice being the cost of her freedom, I think, was really sort of pointing to the fact that she doesn't just, when we get to like where the taxi driver is asking, it's like, where's she from? And she's like, I'm from Iran. She's not guising her heritage anymore. Whereas before, she, as you said, when she was in Vienna, she's like, oh, I'm from Paris. I'm French.
Yeah. So she definitely starts to own her nationality much more, but I think she's clearly struggling with it as a place, which is a bit, it's terribly sad, really. Yeah, of course, I've just realised she's not in America, she's in France, that's where she lives. but yes, she dresses up and puts on her hijab and the like, and it's sad as well. But I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm assuming you enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this film at all. I mean, as I say, I have a list every year. I do my list of film discoveries for the year, and I was looking at the list, and it's really exciting when you have a film come out of nowhere and just like really sort of shoot into that top spot, really. So currently, this is my number 6 film. Between A Guru Wrath of God and 12 Angry Men for my film discoveries this year. So
I win. I feel glad. Now, hopefully other people haven't. I mean, it's a film I have seen it before, but I'm much more aware of the graphic novel, but I just love things where I learn something as well, but it's also, it's just so much going on, and there's sort of, I just like the anecdote-y way. These are little vignettes, little anecdotes that she's telling that tell the wider story. And like you say, some of them are hilarious, some of them are sad, some of them are scary, some of them are tragic, and different things. I think every time I would watch this, different bits would stick with me, depending on how I feel. I liked it, but it doesn't feel fractured or uneven. I hope it certainly doesn't to me. It feels terribly consistent because of the character of Majan, because she's a real person, and it maybe even hyper real. You know, sometimes you think, oh, the tone of this is all over the place. I didn't feel that in the same way.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to this film, I think obviously because of the backdrop of the war, and obviously about the revolution there, and the Islamic fundamentalism. I think he gives this idea this film is going to be like a real sort of hard sort of slog to get through, but it's actually really not. And I think that may have put a lot of people off because of obviously the subject matter it's based around. But I think as the life of that Margie leads, and just her as a character and people in her life, make it such an enthralling watch, and one that I think is definitely worth taking a chance on. Which, oh, as I said, the same way that obviously by doing the show we get to watch and sort of like push myself to watch these sorts of things. Hopefully people who are listening to this will inspire to check it out if they haven't already. On another fun note, it also inspired a new list for myself for charting Godzilla cameos.
I was gonna say you haven't mentioned the Godzilla cameo.
Yeah, she goes to watch Godzilla with her grandmother, and her grandmother's like is like stupid Japanese. So they make movies about its monsters or killing each other with samurai swords.
Yeah, that is all part of a thing. Just going back to I said I watched an Iranian film recently. It wasn't Iranian, it was Tunisian, but still obviously set very much in that world. It's called Black Medusa. If you want a film which is a cross between Miss 45, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, and Promising Young Woman.
Oh, my favorite things at the minute.
Well, I was gonna say, I think it might appeal to you. Quite a sort of dark. She basically goes around killing men every night, and she's mute, and she can only speak through a app. And the opening scene, she basically incapacitates a man with drugs and then buggers him to death with a snooker cue.
Oh.
This is a film for you, but yes, and but yeah, I that was entertaining, but yeah, it just Bijan, yeah, it's one of my favorite. She's one of my favorite film characters, and the fact that she's real as well. And I think if you like, sort of going back to our main show, I think if you enjoy sort of anime, I think you'll get a kick out of this. It feels, I don't know. I was just having a look on the Wikipedia page, and they do say this, that sort of the animation style, how they animated it, is inspired by anime. So I think our built-in audience, even if they normally stick with Japanese stuff, might get a kick out of this as well.
Fantastic. Anything else you want to bring up on this one?
No, that's it from me.
Okay.
I'm just happy you liked it. With the main show, I've got a pretty good feel what you're going to like and what you're not going to like. With this, because we're just picking lots of countries and genres, and it just feels a lot more random every week. It's always a bit like, oh, I hope he likes that. I don't think we've had any problems so far, but I guess it's the same for you, isn't it? It's like it's
just—it's always the scariest part of the week is finding out what the next pick is going to be.
That's right. Because, and I think even more so because, you know, we could go South America or the Middle East or Europe or Russia or whatever, and or Australia even, and it's—I don't know—it just feels like there are a lot more genres we could hit. Even though, obviously, the Asian Cinema Film Club, I hope we've shown that every genre exists in Asia. But yeah. Interesting, but I'm glad you liked it. What are you gonna throw back at me this time, though?
On the next episode, we are going to be heading to Mexico for a film which combines many of the things that you like, Stephen. It combines Batwoman, Mexican wrestling, and Gilman.
I know what this is.
We're looking at the Batwoman from 1968, directed by René Cardona. I have no illusions that this is going to not be probably a great movie, but I think it's going to be is weird enough for us to cover on the show and look at the grand tradition of Mexican wrestling movies.
So the irony is, I literally added this to my Mubi watch list on
Did you?
Tuesday. Yeah, I there's a little mini season of Mexican movies. I watched a fantastic movie called The Skeleton of Mrs. Somebody. I can't remember. We'll talk about it next episode. And I dug it so much. I went, I want to watch more films in this. And it sort of recommended that. And it had the Batwoman. And I saw Mexican wrestlers. And, you know, we've spoken before, haven't we, offline about sort of these movies which are rip-offs of Batman or James Bond or Jaws or classic movies. They're just sort of like appropriations of them. So I'm really looking forward to this. Really looking
forward to this. Wrestling in Mexico is like religion. It's not, as I said, it's not, it's completely different world down in Mexico. And we're obviously going to get into the whole Mexican wrestling scene and the movies that it came out, such as like Santo and the Blue Demon. But yes, join us next time for the Batwoman from 1968. But in the meantime, if you haven't done already, please do hit the like and subscribe button wherever you happen to listen to us. Always check out our main show, the Eastern Cinema Film Club, and you can follow us on Facebook and Threads and Instagram. Come say hi to us there. And you know what? Leave us a review. It all helps raise the profile of the show. But until then, thank you for listening. Thank you to my co-host, Stephen.
Pleasure as always.
And join us next time for The Batwoman. But until then, good night.